ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text Number 8. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Veta Tvam Somya Tat Saravam Tat Vatas Tad Anugrahat Bruyu Snidhasya Sishyasya Guru Vo Guhyamapyuta. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. Purport. The secret of success in spiritual life is satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. Srila Vishwanath Thakur has sung in his famous 8 stanzas on the spiritual masters, as the spiritual master, as follows. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Only by his satisfaction can one please the personality of Godhead, and when he is dissatisfied, there is only havoc on the path of spiritual realization. It is essential, therefore, that a disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. Srila Suta Goswami fulfilled all these qualifications as a disciple, and therefore he was endowed with all favors by his learned and self-realized spiritual masters, such as Srila Vyasadeva and others. The sages of Naimisharanya were confident that Srila Suta Goswami was bona fide, therefore they were anxious to hear from him. The sages gathered to hear from Suta Goswami, had come to hear topics which they indicate are guhya, confidential, not easily understood. Easily understood, or that may mean, according to the empiric method, certain facets or facts of this material world may be understood. But the sages were advanced enough in understanding to understand that our understanding of reality is limited. The senses give us access to experience. We experience through the senses, and by experiencing through the senses we gain knowledge, and by further extrapolation we can increase our knowledge. For instance, it is observed that one apple falls on the head, so the fable goes, of one Isaac Newton, and it sparked off some activity in his brain, must have hit right on the right spot in his head, and he came up with theory of gravity, for which he became known as Sir Isaac Newton. So, knowledge is gained by experience, both our own and that of others. Just like the parent may tell the child, don't put your finger in the, if you have a table fan, don't put your finger in the fan. So the child may agree to follow what the parent says, or may not, and then he will learn by experience why he shouldn't put his finger in the fan. And we can also learn by, like I said, by extrapolation, and by the extrapolations that are told to us by others. For instance, it's not that for us to understand the law of gravity, or what's called the law of gravity, it's not required for all of us to sit under an apple tree and wait for an apple to fall on our head and hope that we can understand it. But thanks to the contribution of Sir Isaac Newton, we can learn about this. So in this way, human knowledge, the pool of human knowledge is increased, and people do research and exploration in the starting from about the 15th or 16th century from Europe. Explorers were traveling to different parts of the earth to discover it, and they're still going into the ocean and into space to try to discover more information about the universe we live in. And there are various facets of research, scientific research, and in so many ways they try to find out what is going on in this world and how is it going on. In physics, geography, chemistry, the wonderful world of mathematics, and then history and politics, we have sociology, in all fields of human exploration and knowledge, they're trying to understand various facets of our existence. Not only our existence, but the existence of the world in which we live. However, the sages gathered at Naimisharanya were already on a more elevated platform than that of the mundane explorers, because they understood that although the senses can give us empiric information, empirically gathered information, and although with our intelligence we can speculate on that and come up with various theories and discoveries, the very senses that give us knowledge, they also limit our knowledge. Because the senses, they're limited. So they give us access only to experience within a very limited area. So if we are to formulate our theories of reality only based on experiential knowledge, well, the first difficulty with that is that not only are the senses limited, but they're also imperfect. So there are various difficulties with experientially gathered knowledge. But if we are to consider more deeply about the nature of reality, then we should consider that reality is almost certainly there's a lot more to reality than that which we can measure. Science means measuring. Measuring also means maya. Napiyate anaya iti maya. Shastra already, before Isaac Newton, what to speak of Stephen Hawking. Vyasadeva had already measured the defect in maya, measured the defect in measuring. That the very attempt to measure everything by our senses, by our sensual, experimental, experiential methods, that is maya. Because reality is immeasurable. It's the total nature of reality is beyond that which we tiny little beings can measure. So our attempt to measure is foolishness. That example is there, that a little insect is born inside the trunk of a tree and his whole lifespan is half a day. He lives in the tree, his food is the tree, and he does everything. He lives and dies in the tree, and the tree lives for 1,000 years. And he has no knowledge of the tree, the very tree he's living in. He has no ability to understand this is a tree, and that apart from this tiny little part of the tree that I'm in, the tree has twigs, leaves, branches, fruit, flowers, and is part of a forest, and beyond the forest there are cities and towns and rivers and oceans. But the bug, who lives half a day, has no ability to understand the tree in which he's living. Frog in the well is another common example. So the sages at Naimisharanya, they were more intelligent to understand that there are confidential mysteries which we can understand, but there is a certain methodology by which we are to understand it, which is reasonable, even from the empiricist's point of view. If we are to study sociology, we don't bring a Bunsen burner or a prism. Bunsen burner we need it for chemistry. Prism we need for physics. For sociology, you have to interview people and make surveys, statistics. This is the methodology of sociology. So, if we are to understand that, or any discipline, we have to adopt the correct methodology. And the sages are sage. They're called, the English word sage means someone who is sage. It means wise, wise men. That's, sage is generally translated from rishi. Rishi means one who has the ability to see the Vedic mantras, which are in subtle sound, within the subtlest, beyond the noise of Secunderabad, beyond the noise or even beyond the silence of this material world. There is subtle sound in which the Vedic mantras, of which the bij, what is that Krishna says? Bija mamaksha, what is that? No, the aksharam. Krishna says, I'm the... Om ityaksharam brahma. No, there's not. Anyway, Krishna says it. Anyway, I can't remember it now, and nor can you. So we're not rishis, that's for sure. So there is the sound Om, is the subtle sound from which all the Vedic mantras manifest, and they vibrate eternally, therefore they're called Apurusheya. So Rishi is one who can contact this Vedic sound. Yeah, not that. There's another verse. I'll find it later. So the Rishis, they are self-realized to some extent. Highly elevated soul. So they want to adopt the methodology. They understand that Suta Goswami, he's on a higher platform than us. Not just physically. Guru is sat on a higher seat. Suta Goswami, even though he's Suta by caste, mixed caste or low, patilom, but he's been given the higher seat Because knowledge has to come down, descending method. Empiric method means we're trying to find the knowledge by going up, but our ability to go up is limited by our limited senses. So they have adopted the methodology of hearing submissively from the person who is fit to speak, with the hope or the faith that by doing so, that he will be pleased to speak, and they will be blessed with the understanding that is the result of submissive hearing. They'll be blessed with the understanding of matters that are confidential. Knowledge is not restricted to anyone or owned by anyone. But still, not everyone can have it. It's true in the material sphere and it's true in the spiritual sphere also. Knowledge doesn't belong to any person. Of course, everything belongs ultimately to Krishna. But just like sometimes we talk about Indian knowledge or Indian philosophy, or Western philosophy, but knowledge or philosophy, we always say the Vedas are Indian books of knowledge, not Indian. If you say Indian knowledge, then immediately it proves you don't have any knowledge, you're a fool. Because knowledge is not Western or Eastern or Indian, or we may say Indian mathematics, but it's not Indian mathematics. The science exists independently of the designations that we may wish to put upon it. They may say Indian mathematics, it means the system that was taught traditionally in India, which, by the way, is much more efficient. It's more efficient than using a computer because you can solve the problems more quickly than it takes to enter in the computer, however good your software is. So, we may say Indian mathematics because it was traditionally taught in India, but mathematics itself, by its very nature, cannot be Indian or non-Indian. It has its own independent existence. So the knowledge is there, but how to access it, we have to know the methodology. And unless we do that, unless we come to the platform of higher understanding, that means we remain in ignorance. That's why in the modern scientific way of thinking, they think we are making progress because we are always discovering more and more knowledge. And they consider that people in the past were ignorant because they didn't know how to make frisbees and footballs and have Miss World contest broadcast all over the world. They didn't have this higher knowledge. We can do things that in the past they couldn't do. Of course, that's what they think. We find that in Bhagavad Gita, Sanjay, the secretary of Dhritarashtra, he had different kind of television system. By the blessings of Vyasadeva, the events on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were revealed to him within the television of his heart. But people think that we're making progress because we know so many things which we didn't know previously. We're coming to higher and higher levels of knowledge. However, if one is actually on a higher level of knowledge, then it's like being in a different dimension by which you understand that whatever is understood at that low level is by its very nature insufficient. Sometimes you can give the example of two-dimensional vision as compared to three-dimensional vision. If we see only in two dimensions, it's like a cartoon. There's no depth. So for a person with two-dimensional vision, he may be very advanced in two-dimensional knowledge, but For one who has three-dimensional knowledge, it's always incomplete. For one who is colorblind, he can never congenitally colorblind, that means from birth, then he can never understand what it means to see different colors. And however much you explain to him, he cannot understand. Or for one who is congenitally blind or deaf, they cannot understand what a beautiful sunrise, how beautiful it looks, they cannot understand. What beautiful music, they can never understand what it means to hear or to see. It's totally beyond their experience and beyond their imagination. So how can you communicate to someone who is congenitally blind what the sunrise looks like, or what anything looks like? So if one is in a society of congenitally blind people, they may, amongst themselves, conclude that there is no such thing as vision. That there are some funny people who talk about seeing things, but it's just their imagination, because they have some psychological insufficiency. And you see, we people who are blind, that means we are more advanced. We can hear better. We can understand things just by hearing and by touching. We understand everything. But these people, because they're so foolish, they can't, by touching and hearing, our perception is so much better than those of these other people. And so because of their insufficiency, they imagine that they are seeing something. But we know, because we are more advanced, and that there's no such thing as seeing. It's just a psychological crutch which they have imagined, because they can't, their sense of hearing and touching is undeveloped. So they may say like that, but for one who can actually see, for him there's no question of seeing or not seeing. He sees. In the community of blind people, they may speculate among themselves that this seeing is just some imagination, because it's not only beyond their experience, but it's beyond their imagination what it means to see. So they may conclude that there's no existence of anything as the sense of sight or vision. But we who are blessed with the faculty of vision can understand that such a theory on the part of blind people is simply their foolishness due to inexperience and due to unwillingness to accept that there is a highly important level of reality which they are totally cut off from. People tend to think that, well, what I know or what I can understand, that's it. That's reality. But that is foolishness. So what to speak of spiritual knowledge? Even in material knowledge, we find that usually when there's some scientific breakthrough, people don't want to accept it at first. Scientific breakthrough, what does that mean? That they're studying different phenomena and data, and they have some problem, and the theories that they have come up with, they don't explain certain phenomena. So what they usually do in science when their theories cannot explain certain phenomena is, then they reject the phenomena, which is not very scientific. The theory can explain certain phenomena, and therefore they say, yes, this theory is very good. But it doesn't explain other phenomena, so then they should come up with a new theory. But what they often do is they say, well, the phenomena you're observing doesn't exist. Just like you'll find that most die-hard empiricists, well, no, not most, all, die-hard empiricists do not accept the existence of the soul. He says, no soul, we haven't seen it. That's it. We haven't seen it, doesn't exist. What to speak of the soul, even ghosts, now, we're not very much interested in ghosts, but there are a lot of them all over the world and have been since time immemorial. And there's a lot of evidence that ghosts or different kinds of spirits exist. But you can't measure, there's no ghostometer. You can't measure it by any material you be. So scientists conclude, well, it doesn't fit our theory. Cannot be true. In the whole of history, anyone who ever experienced, and up to the present day, anyone who ever experienced the presence of a ghost, they were imagining it. That's it. We'll explain it by psychological causes. Although about 20 years ago, there was one flight, Delta Airlines or something from Miami, I think it was, to somewhere in South America, which crashed, unfortunately. And then anyway, they kept on operating the same type of plane on the same route. But what happened is, time to time when they were flying like that, some voice would come over the intercom, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking." And the captain would say, "Wait a minute, I'm the captain." And then the stewardesses, when they're going to get the drinks and this and that, they'd see someone and they'd say, well, in the uniform of Delta Airlines, and said, "Oh, I what are you doing here? I didn't know you were on this flight." It was the captain of the flight that crashed, kept on coming as a ghost on the flight, and eventually they had to stop flying on that route because none of the Delta Airlines staff would go. They were afraid of the ghost. So there are ghosts even in the modern technological age. So I'm just giving this as an example to show how we don't like to accept even things of which there's good evidence if it doesn't fit our little boxed-in way of thinking. That we think reality, this is a box and it's called reality, and everything is inside this box. Frog in the well. All of reality is within this world. And that there could be, and almost certainly must be, something outside that box we don't like to accept. Of course, this box, it's a conceptualized box. It's not a box made out of wood that you can measure. What we're talking about is our conceptions, that we tend to accept the reality only within the conceptions, our preconceived notions. That reality must be like this. But even in science, like I'm saying, even in science, all the breakthroughs come because people, they came up with, they found some problem that certain phenomena can be explained according to this theory, but there are other phenomena that cannot. So this theory is not full and complete in itself. And what they usually do, they try and fit everything into the theory and it doesn't fit and they get frustrated and they try to explain. And then someone looks at it from a completely different angle and says, "Hey, you're thinking all the wrong way. This is it. There's another whole different level of understanding." And in the beginning they say, no, it's all. And then they say, "Oh yeah, okay, that's right." So Newtonian physics, that was considered, this is it. For several hundred years it was considered. Newton came up with the understanding of, or the basic understanding of how energy works within the universe. There are different particles and subparticles, and that's it. And everything that we need to understand in future about science must be explained. There's nothing beyond this. We've found the methodology by which we can understand everything. We just have to do more and more and more research, and eventually we'll understand everything. That's what they used to think. Frogs in the well. Frogs in the well of their own theories. But then they found there's so many things which don't work, there's so many things that can't be explained. And eventually Einstein jumped out of the well and started looking at it from outside. He said, hey, wait a minute, there's another whole way of looking at things. And that relativity theory, which doesn't at all fit with classical physics, came up. And it was accepted. And classical physics goes on. In school, what they're taught, you're not taught relativity theory, and definitely not quantum theory, but classical physics, because at a lower level of at the basic level of understanding, everything fits nicely. So for beginners, it's good. But then if you're going to go higher, you have to go to relativity and then to quantum, which is practically in many ways completely opposite to classical Newtonian physics, which talks about atoms, and that later that was developed into subatomic particles. But quantum theory doesn't admit the existence of particles. Everything is just energy, all which we conceive of in form, but actually in quantum understanding, the form ultimately doesn't exist. Everything's just energy, and there's so many. And even the whole concept of measuring breaks down. You can't properly. Physics is more than any other science based on measuring. That's why physics became the basis of even chemistry and biology, because you can measure, everything's based on measuring very accurately. But in quantum theory, all the measuring breaks down, because you can't measure anything. You can't accurately measure anything. So, but that quantum theory, that was required, because there are problems in classical physics and in relativity theory also. So it's another way of looking at things. And after almost 100 years of quantum theory, the quantum scientists, they're still not sure how they're supposed to be looking, or what they're looking at, or are we really here looking at all. But they know for sure they're onto something, because it works in certain spheres of technology, but it's still boggling their minds. Anyway, the point is here, quantum theory is a completely different way of looking at phenomena than classical physics, which works. But only when we come to higher levels of trying to understand, then it doesn't work. Then we have to try looking at it from a completely different angle, which no one imagined. Newton, for all his greatness, was a long way from Einstein and Bohr and all these later scientists. But Newton was able to look at reality from an angle which no one ever did before. And then later other scientists have done so. Now they're stuck. Maybe they've gone to the limit of understanding matter. They've started to cross over it, that they're measuring. They measure and measure and measure, but as they're measuring, they understand we can't measure, and measuring is ultimately useless. And now they're stuck, because they're still stuck in the consciousness of measuring. So they're bewildered. Our measuring doesn't work anymore, but still, to some extent, it does. But they can't go beyond the where they need to go next. They're bewildered, and they're waiting for the last more than 80 years for the next breakthrough. But you can't get the breakthrough as long as you're thinking in one paradigm, you can't come to another one. So this, although we have no particular business discussing mundane science, but it by Shaka Chandra Nyai, it can help us to understand what is required to take even a much bigger leap, quantum leap they talk about, to a leap into another level of understanding, that the whole of mundane science is based on measuring, the attempt to measure. But to enter the spiritual sphere, we have to go beyond measuring, because the material sphere, this field, sphere of Maya, is mapiyate anaya, the attempt to measure. But so we understand from those who are speaking from the other side of the river of measurement, the Viraja Nadi. We can measure this material world. We can measure, here we are. Yeah, three times. Keep it three times. Don't be lazy. Once is not enough. You know, so we can attempt to measure, here we are on this planet, and beyond this planet there are other planets and what we call galaxies, and in the whole material world is covered by seven coverings, or this Brahmanda is covered by seven coverings, and there's so many different Brahmandas, and they're all floating in the Karana Samudra, and beyond that is the Viraja Nadi. We can measure, we can bring our Bunsen burners and tape measures and our hydrometers and our hygrometers and our logarithm tables, which no one uses nowadays. Do you know what a logarithm table is? I think at school now they don't use logs. They use computers or calculators. So we can bring all these things, but you can only go as far as the Viraja Nadi. And beyond that, it is, even within this world, there are so many things that are immeasurable, but the faculty of measurement does not work beyond the Viraja Nadi, because in the spiritual world, it is presided over by Anaraniya Mahato Mahiya. He is smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest, and there's no scientific way to understand that. If something is very small, it can't simultaneously be very big. We cannot say that a flea is bigger than the Mount Everest. Or that we want to put, a common example, we want to put an elephant on a dish. See, we have to take the elephant from one place to another. Here is one tully. You put the elephant and take it. It's not possible. Is it possible? Yes. Not in this world. In the spiritual world, Krishna is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest. Everything works there according to his desire. Parasya shaktiri vidhaiva shuyate swabhavahi jnana balakriyacha. All the energies that we are studying, they work according to certain laws that we can measure, but the law in the spiritual world is Krishna's pleasure. That is law. Sometimes we see in this material world, the law is some tyrant. The law is what he wants it to be. So that's a perverted reflection. Once in the 19th century, during Victorian rule, the Shah of Persia came to visit London. And they were showing him all the different things to be seen, the sights of London. So they showed him the Tower of London, which students of English history know was the place for imprisoning, torturing, and executing political enemies. Even one of the kings of England was killed there once. There was a revolution at one time. So he was killed, I believe he was killed by guillotining. You know that is guillotine? It's a device which was invented by Monsieur Guillotine from France, and it's a very efficient way of executing people. They have like a big blade and hanging up there, and the person puts their head down and then they let it drop, boom. And very, after the French Revolution, they very efficiently publicly executed many people by guillotine. So they showed this to the Shah of Persia, and he said, "Oh, that's very interesting. Why don't you show me? Put someone and we can see how it works." And said, "Well, we can't do that." And said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, it's against the law." He said, "Well, I'm a king. I'm sorry, but you know, we can't do that. You just can't execute someone because you want to see it." He said, "Well, if you don't want to give one of your people, I'll give one of my people, one of my servants. I want to see what it, how it works." He said, "No, no. According to our law, you can't, even you, with one of your citizens, cannot put someone without any reason, except that you want to see it, on the guillotine and kill them." And he said, "You don't know what it is to be a king. King means whatever he wants. That is the law. You can't say it's against the law. For the king, there is no against the law." So that can be used by a tyrant in this world. But in the Vaikuntha world, that is the law. What, everything is simply centered on the pleasure of Vaikunthana. So your measuring propensity will not work there. What he wants, as Prabhupada said, that in the spiritual world, the ladus, they can, you're feeling very tired after running and jumping with Krishna all morning, so you come for lunch, you're feeling very tired, the ladu might just jump into your mouth. You don't have to pick it up. That's just an example. So that is beyond measurement. So how are we going to understand? Even that there is a spiritual... For the atheist, he's convinced there is no God. Then he's closed his box. Box is closed. There's no God. You can't see God. There's no soul. I experience daily that I wake up in the morning, I brush my teeth, I go to work, and I know for sure I am this body and this is my home, and I am a citizen of India and Mera Bharat Mahan, and I work in this factory, and this is reality. This is all experienced, it's understood, it's very clear. There's nothing mumbo jumbo, hodgepodge. Everything is understood, and there is no reality beyond this. So don't talk about God unless you can show me God. You can't show me, therefore it cannot be real, because I know what is real. This is real. You see, every day since I was born, I see all the different things. I see the sky and the trees, and I see the roads, and this is reality. And this we know for sure. And then you talk about God and soul, and that's not reality. That's just some imagination. For him it's imagination, because he has no means to experience it, and he's, without thinking very deeply about the matter, come to the conclusion that reality is everything that I can experience. So how to bring the atheist to a higher level of understanding? He has to get out of his box. Throw your box away. Get out, jump out of the well, Mr. Frog. There's more beyond it. So how the spiritual understanding begins with understanding that there's more to reality than simply that which we can immediately perceive and extrapolate from our immediate sensual experience. So that's not necessarily simply just like the atheists, they'll say, "Well, it's just all sentiment," and not necessarily so. Why do you presume that? That there is, just like here Prabhupada has used the word scientific, this knowledge. Hey. stop. You have to stop in between, otherwise it all becomes one. When we bring you up to a higher level of understanding, and get out of the, first of all we have to get out of the one time blowing box, then you can get into three times blowing. Then we can lift you to a higher level of understanding that during the class, blow it very quietly or not at all. But I think you're not ready for that. First has to understand, you have to blow three times. So step by step. So to advance in knowledge, we have to be ready to accept that there is understanding beyond that which we are presently at, and that is not just sentimental. So, I was saying that we have in Shastra, we have Bhagavad Gita, very systematically, scientifically explained. It's not just, we don't just like many times people ask, well, how did you give up your Christian background? I gave it up because it was the you just believe in it. That's all. Why? Why should I just believe? You just believe it. It's in the Bible, you believe it. And then why? That's what they say. That was my objection. That, well, you say believe this, and then the Muslim says believe the Quran, and someone else says something. They all say just believe it because it's in the book. Why? So many people say believe it because it's in the book. So what should I do? According to the Muslims, if I don't believe the Quran, I go to hell. If I don't believe the Christians, and I don't believe the Bible, I go to hell. So what should I do? Toss a dice or something and hope for the best? Or is it just my bad luck? I was born in a Christian family, or good luck? Or it doesn't appeal to the intelligence. One major reason that so many people came to Krishna consciousness in the Western world is because it scientifically, systematically, rationally explained reality from a non-empiric viewpoint. That people can understand that prastasmatu bhava nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. There's more to reality than that which we can directly perceive. But what is that? Who can explain that? Well, Prabhupada explained it. And so many people were willing to accept it. It's just like you may say, well, I don't believe all this quantum theory, it's all mumbo jumbo. And actually, if you hear some of their ideas, it really is, sounds like a real lot of mumbo jumbo. According to some quantum theory, I mean, I'm not trying to pretend I understand all these things, because even the quantum scientists themselves don't pretend to understand it. But according to some quantum theories, there are so many different theories, that reality exists in multi-dimensions. Everything everyone does, see, now I'm sitting here like this, and I can go like this, or I can go like this, or I can go like this, or I can go like this. There's so many things I could do from this position at this particular point in time. So according to quantum theory, one of the more bizarre theories that they've come up with, that not only can I do this, but I do this. And at every moment in time, although they can't exactly explain what a moment or what time means, that not only am I going like this, I'm going like this, I'm going like this, I'm going like this. And so there are multi-realities expanding from every point of space and time, unlimitedly, eternally. Doesn't sound like it makes sense, but someone made the mathematics to try to show it. So, to the common man, if you tell him this, he'll say, well, it just sounds like a bunch of mumbo-jumbo. But it is the attempt of some scientists to try to apply quantum theory to reality. And so, you can't say it's just totally unintelligent. It might be wrong, it might be misguided intelligence or whatever. But it's not totally unintelligent. So, because we can't understand something, doesn't mean that someone else can't understand it. This is the arrogance of the atheist, that he thinks that, well, we understand everything, so That's it. All I need to know. This is my home. This is my wife. This is the factory I work in. This is the bus I got in to go to the factory. That's all I need to understand. That's why often people become religious when they have some kind of emotional or psychological or financial or other kind of crisis. Because all of a sudden, everything that they understood, it no longer explains reality for them. I have my wife, I have my home, I have my factory, I get on the bus, and this is reality. But all of a sudden, they're overcome with depression, or their wife runs away, or she commits suicide, and all of a sudden, everything which seems sufficient for their existence is insufficient. I can no longer what I'm experiencing no longer fits with reality. It's just like Arjuna. He was on the battlefield and all of a sudden, how can I fight? He was overcome by distress. So people, they find that what I need to be satisfied, home, wife, factory, work, money, it's no longer enough. It no longer explains reality. I no longer find happiness in going to my job and coming home and eating what the wife has prepared and watching the TV. I no longer find these things no longer give me happiness. What's going on? And then in many cases they turn to religion to try to explain that which cannot be explained simply by the gross empiric method, or the what we can call the normal materialistic outlook on life, is that you have a job, you get money, you have a wife, and you'll be happy. You have a TV and you have a Mixi and maybe a Bajaj or a Maruti, and you'll be happy. But all of a sudden you have all these things, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, there's got to be more to life than this. It may not even be that your wife commits suicide, or it may be just life is going on as normal, and all of a sudden you think, hey, what's going on? Is nothing more to life like this? And then one begins to try to see, he already starts to see reality in a different way. That, wait a minute, what's the pleasure in life? I'm just working all day, 6 days a week, and I come home to my wife and she's okay, but you know, is this all? Is this all there is to life? You know, watching TV and then we go to work and we chit chat and we come home and it's going on like this, and after some time you're going to die, and isn't there more to it than this? And then a Jehovah's Witness comes knocking on the door and says, believe in the Lord or burn. He said, that's it! I'm becoming a Jehovah's Witness. Or whatever. Hopefully the devotee will come and give him a Bhagavad Gita as it is first. But he wants to, feels the need to have a more expanded explanation. His perception of reality, which up to that time he considered was complete and perfect, and nothing more is needed than this, and nothing more than this can exist, because it explains everything. Everything means me, my wife, my country, my factory, and that's everything. That's all I need. I'm completely happy. Until the day he wakes up and, why? What is the purpose of life? That may happen. Or like that, so many people have experiences. They're very much attached to their grandmother who looked after them so nicely, and then, as happens with all grandmothers in due course of time, she dies, and then you start to think, wow, why did she die? I loved her so much. Now she's gone forever. Then you start to think. So breakthroughs in consciousness come when we can no longer, what we can consider a complete understanding, we find it's incomplete. It's no longer sufficient to explain everything that we understand and experience. And someone might conclude, well, then there is no reality, everything's just crazy. Some people come up with that conclusion. But others try to come to a higher understanding. So, generally we find that when there are many difficulties in society, people on the whole tend to become more religious. Because when they can't help themselves and they don't have faith that the government can help me or anyone can help me, they think it's a completely hopeless situation. Some people may commit suicide, others may become communists, even they think there's some solution politically. And people who are more pious, Chaturvidha bhajante mang jano sukritin arjuna arto jignyasa artati jnani cha bharatashana, in distress they start looking for some spiritual solution. So we can discuss with atheists, but they won't accept. They'll say, no, we don't believe it. So many times we discuss with atheists, we give good arguments, and they say, no, we don't believe it. As long as we can't see it, we don't believe it. So we say to them, all right, we pray for the blessings of Krishna on you, that the time in your life will come when you will remember this conversation, when difficulties arise, that you remember, just remember, that there is something beyond reality as you perceive. There's a lot more to reality beyond the method in which you perceive it now. And that scientific or empiric paradigms in themselves are not enough to explain. Certainly the difficulties people experience, their more emotional difficulties, that science can't help with that. Science can help to explain this, that, and the other. And you, for emotional difficulty, you can go to a psychiatrist, but they're not really that very helpful. And even the psychologists themselves say that that's their atheistic theory, but there's some truth in it from one platform, that religion helps to make people psychologically stable. But they call it a psychological crutch. It's not a psychological... Well, crutch, you can say, yes, we're crippled. But by saying that, they want to deny the reality of reality beyond that which they can measure. But actually, we do need support. Crutch means support, so we need support. We are incomplete unless we are yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Krishna told Arjuna, be linked with me in yoga. So unless we're linked with Krishna, then naturally we feel insufficiency. We feel lacking. And we may try to make up for that by amassing material objects and sense gratification, but it can never satisfy us. So we will feel a lacking. And that can be filled by God consciousness. So it is very difficult to wake atheists up to the need for them to understand reality from a higher platform, because for them they can't even begin to understand what it is. They're in their box, they think this is it, this is all in all. And the need for their psychological need has not arisen to understand reality beyond the tiny little world in which they conceive of it. That's why distress in human society can be very good, actually. One devotee I know from many years from Bangladesh, I met him in Mayapur a couple of years ago. And I said, well, I heard there's a lot of disturbances in Bangladesh now. The Hindus are getting a lot of torture from different Muslim groups. And because our preaching is 99.99% in Bangladesh among the Hindus. So he said, yes, it's very good. The more trouble, and then they become more religious. Good for, he says, good for our preaching. That's maybe one reason why the Hindus in Bangladesh are so much responsive to our preaching, is because they're always living in fear and uncertainty. It's one reason, not the only reason. So this discussion, the sages at Naimisharanya, they wanted to hear from Suta Goswami to give them that guhyamakyati prichati, that's stated in, where is that? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, no? Nectar of instruction, yeah. We should, Upadeshamrita. That we should inquire confidentially. That doesn't just mean inquire about your family, your friends, and it means to inquire into the guhyat guhyataram param, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita. This is the most secret of all secrets, very confidential knowledge. You can't explain, actually, you can't explain quantum physics to one who hasn't been through classical physics. There's some gradation. So even in the field of theism, we find that Vaishnavism is anathema to the Mayavadi, who accepts that yes, there is spiritual reality, but does not accept that spiritual reality is a person. Or even if he superficially accepts that spiritual reality is a person, he thinks that the person is subordinate to the impersonal aspect. So he's realized that yes, there is spiritual Brahma. There is the Brahma, the spiritual existence. But he doesn't accept it as a person. He can understand that this material life is not all in all. There is spiritual reality. But then when he thinks of spiritual reality as a person, he thinks, no, that can't be. Because person means limited. Person means measurable. Measure the pulse, measure the heartbeat, measure the brain waves. Person means who's fixed in one place. We are now in Secunderabad. We are not in Hyderabad. You can only be in one place at one time. And even a yogi can expand up to 9 forms. A person cannot be omnipresent. So they reject the concept that the ultimate reality is a person. And person means subject to defects. Cannot have full knowledge. Is not omniscient, not omnipresent. A person means he's biased towards others. Person means he can only have limited relationships. Person means limited, and spiritual means unlimited. They are limited by this understanding. It is beyond their, it's enough. They've gone from one dimension, the holy empiric dimension, to the spiritual dimension. Yes, there is unlimited. But what is the nature of that unlimited? They have again a limited understanding. And they think we have understood everything about the unlimited. But they are still, they've come up one dimension, but they're still a long way from ultimate understanding. But they can't see that. They think, yeah, this is it. And they think, yes, it's very good. The Vaishnavas, they're worshipping Krishna. It's very good. And by doing bhakti, eventually they will come to the platform of Gyan and understand that Krishna is all like us, is also a product of the modes of material nature, and that we have to go beyond Krishna to the unborn impersonal within Krishna. So they actually become offensive and end up at a worse position than the gross materialists. So that's why impersonalism is called the last snare of Maya. You know this snakes and ladders game? I guess everyone in India, everything Western. And so this snakes and ladders, you go up, 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 and then at 99 there's one snake which you slide down and go back to number one, right? So it's like that. Aruhya Kritraina Parampadang Tata Patantyato Nadata Yushmadanga. You go up, 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 up with great effort, being a Mayavadi, and you come some so close, you understand everything is unlimited, and then you say, so hum. Then you go right back down to a worm in stool. That's what happens. So this is this snakes and ladders of Maya. You think you can, again you think, now I've understood everything. When you think you've understood everything, then we haven't understood. And we again go back to measuring how big is this piece of stool, as a worm in stool. So the Mayavadis, they cannot accommodate within their consciousness, they're limited understanding of Bhagavan. They'll say yes, Bhagavan, Ishva, but Ishva is also a product of the Brahma. Although Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, tell me the verse. No, not that one. Avyakta. Avyakta, Avyakta, Vyaktim, Apana, Manyante, Mam, Abuddhayaha. Why? Krishna says that those who say that I, person, Krishna, have come from the Avyakt, the impersonal, they are Abuddhayaha. They think we are very intelligent. We are Jnanis. But Krishna says, Abuddhayaha. No intelligence. Why? Because, say it. Anyone? You were saying? Param? Param bhavam ajananta. Mamavyayam anuttama. Because they don't know. They think that Krishna is also, they can only think of a body as being a product of this material world. Param bhavam ajananta. They don't know that Krishna is transcendental even to the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Mamavyaya. I am avyaya. My body is transcendental. It is not divisible. It is not separate from everything else and anything else. Krishna is simultaneously localized and all-pervading. This again appears to defy our logic. How can something be? That's why the Mayavadis, they deny form. Because form means situated in one place, and how can it be all-pervading? If it's not omnipresent, then it can't be the absolute truth. There's something lacking in it. So they're stuck. They've come up, but they're stuck in this box of thinking that the absolute must be impersonal. They cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is simultaneously localized and all-pervading. Goloka eva nivasatyakilatma bhuta. He's residing in Golok, and at the same time in everyone's heart. They cannot accommodate that because they still have the tendency mapiyate anaya. It is not possible. We cannot conceive by our measuring faculty. We cannot conceive how the Supreme is a person and all-pervading. They're stuck in impersonal understanding. Brahman realizes it. They have to come up, and they've already come up. They've come out of the empiric, gross empiric understanding. Now they have to come to higher still, to another understanding, another dimension beyond that, that of Bhagavan realization. That the Supreme is the personality of Godhead who is to be served. He is Satchidananda Vigraha. He is the source of everything. So for the atheists and for the impersonalists, they cannot understand this. Even if they see Krishna, they can't see him. The materialist says, show me God. But even if they see him, they cannot understand him. Just like a quantum physicist, he sees what I see. Right now, I am seeing the outside there's the garden with the flower trees. I'm seeing it. But I'm seeing only according to my experience and understanding. If a botanist saw that garden, he'd say, well, this is this, and this is... you must be putting water on the tree, otherwise it wouldn't be flowering. The champa only gives flowers if you put water. So I'm a little bit of a botanist. But the botanist, he would understand so much more, and maybe this tree should be placed next to that tree and they'll mutually help each other and so many things. He has, or the quantum physicist sees it's a bunch of energy. He has a different way of looking at it according to his understanding and training. So one who has got Bhagavan realization understands this is the Supreme Person. This is the ultimate reality. Bhagavan. Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti Bhagavan iti shabdyate. The last word in understanding the Absolute Truth is to understand Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person who is to be served. Who would imagine that the ultimate truth is a person? It seems that we came back, we went up to spiritual life and we came back to material life, but this person is not a person, in some ways like us, but in other ways not like us. This the Mayavadi cannot accommodate, that the Absolute Truth must be completely different to everything that we can conceive of. So we can conceive of, we see everything, form, relationships. So he presumes that form and relationships, this cannot be in spiritual life. But that is the essence of spiritual life. But without the contamination. The contamination of aham mameti, ishvara aham aham bhogi, siddho aham balavan sukhi. Giving up that attitude and coming to the attitude, gopi bharto padakamalayo dasu dasana. Then we can see Krishna. Otherwise, even we see Krishna, we'll think, just like Duryodhan saw Krishna. He saw Krishna and Arjuna saw Krishna. Arjuna saw, this is my Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Duryodhana thought, this rascal, my enemy. So Duryodhana saw Krishna, but he didn't see Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore he could never be blessed with bhakti, because he thought that my understanding is complete. And he didn't care. Even everyone told him. Krishna told him, Dhritarashtra told him, Gandhari told him, Vidur told him, Bhishma told him, Drona told him. Everyone told him, you cannot win this battle. You make peace with the Pandavas. You can live happily, they will live happily. Could not hear it. It was beyond his scope of understanding. His scope of understanding, I'm the king, I'm sitting on the throne, I'm powerful, I have strong friends, to hell with all their stupid advice. Who can dislodge me from my position? Limited understanding. He couldn't hear submissively what was obvious to others. He could not understand. He was distraught. Because he kept his understanding at the very low level. So then we have to go beyond Vitaraga Bayakrota Manmaya Mamupashita Bahavo Gyana Tapasa Putama Bhavamagataha. Beyond attachment, material attachment. This is my home, this is my wife, this is all in all. Vitaraga Bhaya, fear. No, form is very bad, relationship is very bad. Vita raga baya krodha, or rejection of any kind of spiritual knowledge. Going beyond fear, going beyond attachment, fear and anger, becoming purified by actual knowledge and leading a pure life, accepting tapasya, we can come to Krishna, understanding the personality of Godhead. So that's the ultimate, right? Understanding that the Supreme Lord is in the spiritual world and we're all His servants and we have to serve Him. That's the ultimate, right? Isn't it? Isn't it? Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha? No. You have to go beyond that. The Supreme Lord is in Vaikuntha. He is served. You have to go even beyond that. Raghunath Das Goswami speaks about that if you're not careful, you'll get thrown down to Vaikuntha. So Vaikuntha understanding, that's also, there's some limitation that the Supreme Lord is there. We're all His servants. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jivesarup hoy Krishna Nitya Das. We're all supposed to serve Him, and He's there, and He's the Supreme Lord, so we do everything for His pleasure. So He sits on a throne, and we serve Him very nicely, and that's it. That's the ultimate understanding. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, be careful. You'll get thrown down to Vaikuntha. What is it, thrown down to Vaikuntha? We're trying to get up there, and He's talking about getting thrown down. So what's going on? Madhva Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, they worship Vishnu, Lakshmi Narayan. They also worship Krishna, who they conceive of as an expansion of Vishnu. Or they accept Lord Ram, Maryada Purushottam. This is God. Very good, very moral, protects us, just like a father and mother Lakshmi, and we serve Him, and that's all in all. And therefore Madhva, he doesn't accept Gopi Leela. And what is it? We can't accept this. This is our Lord, and then you find out the gopis are biting Him? What is this? Or that Krishna is running, the Gauriyas, they're telling us Krishna is running after Radha, lamenting. Radha has left me, and the Supreme Lord is lamenting. Why? The servant should be coming to Him. She should immediately come back. We won't find this in Rukmini. She won't be making Krishna angry or storming out of the room. She knows, He's the Supreme Lord. He's my husband, but He's the Supreme Lord. I have to serve Him. So they're stuck, and they'll make so many Shastric arguments. What is this Radha? We can't believe in Radha. And even in Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't find the mention of Radha, even though the Gauriya Vaishnavas, they find her in every syllable, but the non-Gauriyas, they can't find her at all. Just like the quantum physicist, he sees through everything is waves, but we don't see. We're not on that level of understanding. So they're also stuck in a box. They can't go beyond pleasing the Lord in a very formal manner, whereas actually He Himself prefers the chastisements of the gopis. Oh, you rascal Krishna, go away, we're never going to see you again. Krishna likes that more than the Vedic hymns. Oh, ma, om, esha, purusha. Krishna likes, He's called Stavapriya, but He doesn't like, you can do that for thousands of years, and He won't like it as much as the gopis slapping Him in the face and telling Him to get out. Now who can understand? We can't do that. If we do that, we go to hell. That's why Narad, Krishna, He wanted to find out who's the best devotees. He said, I'll give you you do this test. You go to all my devotees, tell I have a headache, and the cure is I need some dust on their feet. So Brahma wouldn't give it. What are you doing, man? You get the dust on my feet and put it on Krishna's head, I'll go to hell forever. And the gopis, he went, oh Narad, where are you coming from? From Krishna. Krishna, how is he? Got a headache? Anything we can do, give the dust, that will cure. Okay, take it. You go to hell. Okay, we'll go to hell. You have to cure Krishna's headache. But those who are on the formal platform, they cannot understand. They're stuck in the box of thinking, God sits on the throne, He fanning, that's true. Just like the classical physics, it's true, but it only works up to a certain level. So they want to give different Shastric arguments, but Shastra also explains how Krishna is dancing in the Rasa Leela, and how come Brahma is bewildered, even though he's the head of our Sampradaya. So Madhva, he deals with Brahma Vimohana Leela and Gopi Leela by expunging it from the Bhagavatam. We cannot discuss this. Just like Shankaracharya, he didn't give any commentary on Bhagavatam because, you know, we can't discuss this. This is Leela. This is discussing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But our philosophy is that everything is impersonal. He didn't discuss Bhagavatam at all. Madhva didn't discuss certain chapters of the Bhagavatam. Because just like the atheists will say, there's no God, finished. So we don't, Madhvas are not atheists, they're devotees, but their understanding only goes so far. And we have to understand only according to Shat, but you try to understand what is the implication of Bhagavan. He is a person. A person means, you think he wants to sit on a throne all day, every day, and that's all, and have every... You think he won't enjoy a little fun sometimes? He won't enjoy his mother chastising him, or even his girlfriend chastising him? He won't enjoy? If there is, spiritual existence means personality, so you've understood that, it's not impersonality. Here is a person, so the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person, so he has to be satisfied by service. But service doesn't mean only formal service. Even the kings, they used to keep a jester in the court, and the jester, his job is a very dangerous job. He would make fun of the king mostly. He's the only one who could do it. Sometimes he got his head chopped off also. It's a dangerous job. But his job was to make fun of the king, because everyone's praising the king, and sometimes he thinks it's funny if someone makes a joke about me. No one else can do it. If his prime minister makes a joke about the king and says, hey, you look too fat, stop eating so much, he'll immediately have his head chopped off. But Prabhupada used to tell so many Gopal Ban stories. This the jester in the court of one of the kings. So one time he came into the court and the king is sitting on his throne, and he said, the king said to him, because the king would also joke with him. So the king says to Gopal, Gopal, what's the difference between you and an ass? So Gopal looked at him and then he walked towards him, taking one step, two step, count, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And he reached right out to the king and he said, eight steps. Quick-witted. So the king laughed. So he can do that. The king enjoys. He's not all the time, yes sir, no sir, yes, whatever you say sir, but yes, you're an ass. Oh, that's a funny joke. Yes, he enjoys. So if God's actually a person, he's not just yes sir, salute, play this shanai, but sometimes, or even most of the time, he may enjoy informal dealings. That's more enjoyable than formal dealings. So many times you'll find these dignitaries, they're invited to some formal function and they're just falling asleep. Can you imagine how boring it must be to be a king? Prabhupada told that story of Gladstone, Prime Minister of the British Empire at the time, at the height of its glory, towards the end of the 19th century. So one man had an appointment with Gladstone to meet him in his office. So he went to his office and he told, you just wait outside. He's busy. Okay, he must be busy. He's the Prime Minister of England. So he was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. So must be some very important business he's dealing with. He's waiting and he's just thinking, I wonder what it is. Is he dealing with some uprising in Afghanistan, or he's talking with the Prime Minister of Russia, or what is it? Big topic. It must be some very important thing. He looked, all the guards had gone off for their tea break. He thought, I'll just open the door and have a look and see what he's doing. So he very quietly opened the door and looked inside, and there he saw the Mr. Gladstone, the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire, very busy for several hours. He hadn't opened the door. He's on the floor of his office with his grandson sitting on the back saying, get up horse, move horse. He's playing horse with his grandson. So why? He's busy, he's got so much work. But he likes to play with his grandson. Now if that man who's come for the appointment, he thinks, oh that's good, I'll jump on his back too. You can't do that. The grandson can do it because he's the grandson. He has the intimate relationship. He can do so. Not everyone can do that. That's why Lakshmi cannot go to Ras Leela, because she's Lakshmi. And she'll be saying, oh, it's my husband. And she can't join the Ras Leela because she's in Lakshmi Bhav. So in the same way, the Vaishnavas who worship Lakshmi Narayan, they cannot understand Radha Krishna. It's in a different dynamic. You have to start seeing from a different angle altogether. It's very, as long as you're stuck in the lower way of thinking, you can't understand it. But what is that understanding? That is also Vedic. Raso Vayasaha. The Supreme Absolute Truth is Rasamaya. He's made up of rasa. The most important thing for Krishna is not being the controller and dominator of millions of universes and all living beings. Much more important to Krishna than the fact that he's the supreme controller of everything is that he is controlled by the gopis. That's more important to him. Just like for Gladstone, the big business of the empire, more important to him is grandson playing. Or the prime minister, he's prime minister, and the country's on strike, and the foreign colonies are uprising, and the economy's in a mess. But when he goes home, his wife has a toothache, that's more important. Oh wow, my wife has, okay, take her immediately to the dentist. But wait a minute, the whole empire is collapsing. Well, my wife's got a toothache, I'm going to take her to the dentist. What's more important? Those who are very near to and dear to him. There's so many things going on, and it's all his business, he's not unconcerned. But those who are very near and dear, that is the most important thing. So if we accept God as a person, then we don't keep him in a box, that this is our understanding. That you're okay, I'm a servant, you're God, okay. Fan you, offer some food, say some stutis, and that's it. You're God, and I'm here, and you're the Lord, and that's it. But if we understand he's a person, raso vaisaha, then there should be more to him than that. Otherwise, in the material world, it's a perverted reflection, but we have more than he has. So the ultimate understanding of reality is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and if anyone can show us anything higher, we'll go. But up to now we didn't find anything, and we don't expect to find anything. We don't expect to find anything higher than Krishna being chastised by the gopis. Supreme Personality of Godhead. But who will understand that? Yes, Shastra, but try looking at it from a different level. It's not just logic, not just learning, but we have to see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Rasamaya, full of juice, lively personality. And that reciprocation of love between Krishna and his devotees, that is unlimited. So this way we have to go progressing. Progressive understanding. Not get stuck at any one point. The sages at Naimisharanya, they could understand. There's more to understand than we understand. We're not there. Sudha Goswami is there. Let's hear from him. So we cannot understand Krishna by empiric method, or not even simply by studying the Vedas. Krishna is Vaidaishya Sarvaya Hameva Vedyaha. Krishna is to be, he is the object of understanding in the Vedas. The Vedas are meant for understanding him. But simply by academic or bookish knowledge, he cannot be understood. There's another factor, another way of looking. Newtonian physics is science and quantum physics is science, but it's a different level. So just like when in Newtonian physics, when all that is observed doesn't fit within the paradigm, then we have to come to another paradigm. So in Shastra we do have how Krishna is being tied up by his mother. We have that Krishna has a mother. That in itself, God, who is the source of everything, he has a mother. So, or that he's chastised by the gopis. Well, that doesn't fit within normal Vaishnava paradigm. So then we have to come to a higher one. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, or his understanding, that perfectly explains. It's a different way of looking at it. Instead of looking at reality, the defect in all incomplete understandings is that we tend to look at everything from our platform of understanding. Reality is me, my wife, my factory, that's it. And we have to come to a higher level. There is God. But then we conceive of God as someone who is our order supplier. God is this supreme benevolent person, and he makes everything nice for me. So that attitude is even carried up to Vaikuntha. Mostly the worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan, they think that we'll worship Lakshmi Narayan, he'll give us moksha. Within that moksha, they understand within moksha means service to the Lord, but it's still self-centered. What he will give me. That we will serve him, we will be very happy. But the gopis' understanding, or the higher Vrindavan understanding, is when we stop thinking about what God can do for me, and start actually Krishna consciousness means think, what does he want? I'm a servant, he's God, okay. He should be like this, I should be like that. When we stop thinking about how I think I should be in relationship to God, and think how he wants me to be in relationship to him, then we can understand how the gopis are ready to go to hell forever to cure Krishna's headache. Means they see everything from Krishna's point of view, that our own happiness doesn't matter. It's not a factor. That's the actual meaning of service. That we will suffer if Krishna is happy. Krishna's happiness is all in all. This is service beyond any calculation. What do I get? So that's how we come up, 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 above and beyond, even above Vaikuntha. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Shastra par excellence, because it gives us entry into Vrindavan, which is immeasurable. Vaikuntha is immeasurable, but even just like the atheists cannot conceive of, the atheists and the Mayavadis cannot conceive of Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha conception is beyond them. So the Golok or Vrindavan conception is beyond that even of the Vaikuntha Vasis. So when Shonakadi Rishi, they're asking Suta Goswami to explain that which is Guhyam, they themselves may not have understood what they were going to enter into. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us entrance into the topmost section of the spiritual world. That's why you're going to go and study. What are you going to go and study? Sanskrit. No. When I was saying to Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, they're teaching Sanskrit. He said, we're not teaching Sanskrit. Now everyone knows Gopi Puranadana Prabhu is teaching Sanskrit. But no, we're not teaching Sanskrit. He said, we're teaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam, through the commentaries of the Acharyas, therefore Sanskrit. Sanskrit is not the end, it is the means. And actually Srimad Bhagavatam, ultimately no one can teach Srimad Bhagavatam. Education, the meaning of the English word education, it means to draw out that which is already within. So ultimately no one can teach, but one can merely give indications, and then when Krishna is satisfied, then that knowledge will be revealed within the heart. It's not something external that is dumped on our head, but rather it's already there within the heart, and it's the guru, his job is to teach, but to give the knowledge which is to be awakened. Divya Gyan Hride Prakashito. It's not that Divya Gyan you add it all up, and then you sit and you do an exam and I pass the exam. But that knowledge has to be revealed within the heart. So that is revealed by the submissive service attitude, which is spoken here, which is another great topic, which I won't start on now. But just what is the some indication of what is the meaning of the word guhyam here, we can reflect on and try to understand. Is there any question? Yeah.
All the while in the lecture, they are giving the main argument, but actually people are stuck up with their own understanding.
Yeah.
One has to come.
Yeah, so what he's saying is that I was saying that everyone's stuck up in their own conception of reality, and we have to go up, above, and beyond.
Alright, so anyone else who's not in our sampradaya can also give the same argument.
Anyone else who's not in our sampradaya can give the same argument.
Saying that you are a skeptic and you are understanding this is a subject, there is something beyond. So how do we.
Others may say that we have the highest and you're stuck up in a lower conception. Well, I think I addressed it. Is that beyond gross material, the empiric conception is that there is spiritual reality beyond that. Beyond the impersonal concept, there's the concept of the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Lord. But then beyond that, there's something more. We also accept, just like each progressively higher concept includes within it, yet also transcends the concepts below it. So, in accepting Vrindavan Krishna, we don't neglect or deny the concept of Vaikunthanath. That's there, but there is more. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always told Ramananda Rai, Eho Bahya, Age Karo Ah. And even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he's saying that everything you're saying is external, say something more. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted, Eho Hoy, this is correct. Age Karo Ah. Even then he said, still there's more to say. So, Vaikuntha Vasis, they may say, we have got more, but even from the philosophical point, we can see that they haven't explained the personality of Godhead more than 2.5 rasas. They have Shantaras, Dasyaras, and Sagorav Sakyaras. Mostly in Vaikuntha they only get as far as Dasya Ras, but some may have some Sagorav Sakya Ras, means friendship, but the lower level of friendship. That's why we say 2.5 rasas. Lower level means they're friendly but still with great respect. So Vrindavan, there are 2.5 rasas more, which means Vishramba Sakya Ras, means Sakya Ras without formality. You can slap Krishna on the back, jump on his back in friendship. And then there's Vatsalya Ras and Shringara Ras. So that's why it's saying to understand, to come beyond the Vaikuntha concept, we have to see from a different platform. That is the platform of Ras. By Rasa Vichar, one can understand that Vaikuntha is limited. But in Vrajaras there is no limit. There's no limit to the intimacy. It's more intimate, therefore more personal. Therefore, the understanding of the Supreme Lord Bhagavan as the person, which the Vaikuntha Vasis, they very strongly contest the Mayavadi concept that the Supreme is not a person. They very strongly insist that the Supreme is a person. So that's good, but we say he's a person, and you have to see what is the full extent of his personality. You've only seen his personality this far. If we're to understand him as a person, we have to understand him not only as a king, but also as the child of Mother Yashoda and as the lover of Radharani. So philosophically we can understand it is more complete. That has to be discussed philosophically. You didn't get this working? Can't get it working? No.
Not necessarily the bare idea superior, but they may accuse the same.
No, they may accuse and I'm giving the answer. But they may not understand, just like the atheists don't understand because they haven't found the necessity. They don't have the psychological or emotional necessity to believe in God because they're satisfied at that level. So in one sense, yes, Vaikunthavasi, you can be satisfied on that level.
They may even accept our superiority, but the question is that how are you sure that this is the highest?
They may not see it as highest. For them, the highest is where they're at. So we're just trying to establish philosophically here what is the highest. They may not accept. And the Lord may be satisfied, because he is Vaikunthanath also. So he also likes that. So that is perfect and complete. But there's Purna, Purnatara, Purnataram, Purnatamam. The Lord in Vaikuntha, he is Purna, complete and perfect. In Dwarka, Purnatara, more perfect. Now perfect means it's already closed. If you say perfect, the door is closed. The box is closed. There's nothing more beyond that. But there's more perfect, which in logical understanding is not possible. So, Dwarakesh, he is more perfect than Vaikunthanath. And then Purnatamam, topmost perfection is Krishna in Vrindavan. But for the Vaikunthavasi or the Ayodhyavasi, that is complete, and the Lord may not even want them to go beyond that. If Hanuman becomes a gopi, then who's going to jump over to Lanka? So Hanuman is Hanuman and he likes being Hanuman. And Ram likes him being Hanuman. He doesn't want Hanuman to become a gopi. When that Hanuman says, Srinathe Janakinathe Chabeda Paramatmani, Tasmat Mama Sarvasvam Rama Kamala Lochanaha. He says, I know that Srinath, Vaikunthanath, Lakshmipati, and my Rama, they're the same, Paramatma, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm for Ram. I'm a Ram bhakta, not a Vishnu bhakta. So they know. So Hanuman is Hanuman and he likes to be Hanuman, he'll always be Hanuman, and Ram is very happy with that. But when the rishis at Dandakaranya came and said, we want to be like Sita in a relationship, said, okay, you can be, not this time, you wait when I come as Krishna. Then you can become gopis. But Hanuman wasn't asking to become the wife, but the rishis in Dandakaranya, they were wanting to be. So this is rasa vichar. Why didn't they want to become servants of Hanuman? But Ram accepted, yes, you can, but not this time. When I come as Krishna, then you can come. So, ultimately Krishna can't be measured, the measurement is there, but a different kind of measurement, that is rasa vichar. That the attempt to measure by simply through our measuring instruments, that is incomplete. Ultimately the reality is to be experienced. So measuring by the yardstick of rasa.
How are we sure that this understanding of our samurai is highest?
How can we show this understanding of our samurai is highest? We can show, but who can see? Just like Duryodhana saw Krishna, but he couldn't see him. So therefore one has to be Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lotadi. It's a certain kind of good fortune. Otherwise Janma Koti Sukritaya Na Labhyate. This highest understanding, and Arpita Charin Charat Kuruni Avatiyano Kalo Samapyatam Unatajvala Rasa Subhakti Sriyam. This Unatajvala Rasa, Gopi Rasa, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to distribute that is not normally distributed in human society. Only after a very long time since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu last came was it distributed, and that is not understood simply by philosophy or even by Sukriti. Tasmad lolyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritayana labhyate. By ordinary pious activities one cannot understand. One has to attain greed, a strong desire. And this strong desire to attain Krishna comes from associating with devotees who have that strong desire. So it's not just a philosophical matter. One requires the mercy of devotees. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Not only by studying Shastra. Therefore we have Atapite Deva Padambhujaswa. We're saying Shastra to show how Shastra is incomplete. Know this verse? Atapite Deva Padambhujadvayam Prasadalesano Grihita Evahi Janati Tatvam. You have the word Tatvata. Janati Tatvam Bhagavan Mahimno Vachanya Ekopi Chirang Vichinvam. One cannot understand the truth of Krishna even by studying it for many, many lifetimes. That when one gets a drop of his mercy, then he can understand.
Regarding the omnipotence of the Lord, God is everywhere, and that we also
omnipresent, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. That's the Christian definition of God, which is true, but it doesn't say everything about it. Omniscient means he knows everything. Omnipresent, he's present everywhere. And omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. It's pronounced omnipotent. All powerful. Yeah.
So, we also pray to devotees. Prabhupada is there. All the devotees pray to, all the disciples pray to Prabhupada. So many people pray.
People pray to Prabhupada, yeah. He's not God, but by the grace of God, he can act in some ways like God. Just like Hanuman, he jumped over to Lanka, and Ram had to build a bridge. So Hanuman became more than God, by God's grace. Because Ram's bridge wasn't an ordinary bridge, but still he had to build a bridge. So by the grace of God, the devotee can become, in some respects, as good as or more than him. By his grace. And if God, if you say, well, God can't do that, then again you're limiting. Of course, Ram can also jump to Lanka, but he doesn't. But Hanuman does. There was one other who could jump. Who was that? Jambavan, wasn't it? He said, I can also jump. But I said, but I'm old now, and I think if I jump, I can't jump back. So what's the use of me going? I can't give you news, so. Hanuman, you go. Me? You can do it. Really? He didn't know. He forgot. Then he got reminded. He forgot his power. Because he was in his childhood he was causing so many problems, jumping up, catching the sun and so many things. So they said, okay, just be a monkey for now. Just forget you have this power. And when you grow up, then you can remember again. So when he needed the power came back. And he was no longer a child and he was using for some useful purpose. Ramayana. You want to understand Gopi Leela? First you have to understand Ramayana. All these things are required. Like the gopis were chastising Krishna that we know you're a very bad character. We heard all about you from Purnamasi, how when you were Vaman Dev, this Bali Maharaj, he was very good. He offered you everything and you simply took everything away from him and tied him up. We know your character, you see. And when you came as Ram, this Shurpanaka, she didn't do anything wrong. It's, any woman can propose to